Chapter 7. In the Red Deeps. Following the sale of the mill, the Tulliver's life became hard, dull, and monotonous. Mr. Tulliver became sullen and silent. He had lost all his pride and couldn't bear to meet other people, even if most of them, his creditors included, were friendly and sympathetic to him. Mrs. Tulliver, with an empty house and nothing to occupy her, became childish and simple-minded. Tom came home late every evening, exhausted and taciturn. The family had to economize on servants, clothes and food in order to save enough money to repay their creditors, and they grew tired and shabby as a result. Maggie found this new life unbearable. She felt that her life was finished before it had begun. She had to find a distraction to help her bear the monotony more easily. One day, searching for something to read, she found a religious book which said that the only way to achieve happiness in this world was to give up your personal desires, submit to other people, and accept your lot in life. Maggie decided that this was what she would do. She must stop thinking about herself, calm her wild spirit, and deny herself anything that she didn't need. She started sewing shirts in her free time to contribute to her family's savings, and she never spoke against Tom or her parents. Tom, too, made many sacrifices for the family. He worked hard in the warehouse and soon won the respect of his aunts and uncles. He saved most of his wages to help pay his father's creditors and gave up going out completely. He began secretly risking some of his money in cautious investments, and these investments did well. He soon began to accumulate a small sum of money, but he kept this a secret from his father. Maggie's life of strict discipline continued for the next few years. She gave up all her old pleasures except one, walking alone in the countryside. Her favourite walk took her to a place near the mill called the Red Deeps, a wild and overgrown valley that used to be a quarry. One day, when Maggie was sitting dreaming there, she was surprised to find that she was not alone, and that her companion was Philip Wakeham, now 22 years old. She was pleased to see Philip again, and amazed to find out that he had never forgotten their meeting at Mr. Stelling's.
"That was 5 years ago," she said. "I was only 12 years old. Am I very different now?"
"Yes, you are,"
Philip replied.
"You are much more beautiful."
Maggie was both pleased and surprised. She had given up looking at herself in the mirror and didn't have time to think about the impression she made on other people.
"I'm so sorry that we can't be friends, Philip,"
she confessed sadly.
"Everything from my childhood has been taken from me. My books, you, Tom and my father. Please understand that if I don't speak to you, it isn't because I don't want to, but because I know that I mustn't."
"But it can't hurt anyone if we meet each other,"
protested Philip.
"It isn't right to deny yourself friendship."
"I know now that denial is the only way that I can find peace,"
she replied.
"I have given up wishing for things that I can't have."
"But if you give up wishing, then you give up being alive,"
argued Philip.
"That's what life is all about. There are lots of things that I wish for, things that other men have, and that I can never have. But if we could meet, Maggie, it would make my life more bearable."
Maggie had never imagined that Philip's request to see her was anything more than friendship. Philip could see that, and it hurt him, but he continued with his argument.
"Perhaps our friendship can help make peace between our fathers. Please, let's meet here again, just once or twice a month."
Maggie could not give an answer. She ran off, telling Philip to come and find her in the Red Deeps another day, when she would let him know her decision. Philip was encouraged. He was already in love with Maggie, and he thought that if they could only spend time together, Maggie might begin to love him too.